Thanks and good afternoon, honorable president and honorable members of the portfolio committee, members from the various SOEs, as well as the officials from the department. Good afternoon. And I'll start by introducing the team that I'm with. Thank you. In the inner circle, if you want, it's Mr. Kulube Mashala is the acting CFO. Next is responsible for finance. Next to him is Dr. Jacob Modumo. He is responsible for business development. And then on his left is Mr. Kulube Ramorog, but he's using Kaifas here. And he's responsible for strategic planning and projects. And then on the outer circle, it's Ms. Mobeng, Ms. Ndabizonda Mobeng. She's the company secretary and legal advisor. And next to her is Professor Smith. She is the chief operations officer. Perhaps one other thing about Mr. Kaifas Ramorogan, he is also acting in the chief scientific officer position. So you've got about three actors that are here. The presentation is basically, this is the layout. I'm going to be covering just to give a preview of the results for this 2010-11 financial year, which is going to end tomorrow. And then I will go through the presentation.
Any board member?
No, there are no board members that are here from OBT. And currently, we have not received communication from the department. So in terms of the PSMA, I'm also playing that role. But we've not received communication from the department as yet. So I think I'll leave that question to you. I've tried to answer, but I think the officials from the department can respond.
So this is an entity that is a PMSA Section 3B profit making. It does not have a board. Are you saying so? And also there is also a Hollywood scenario. If not Hollywood. What do we call it in Cape Town? Cinewood. I saw it somewhere. acting CEO, acting CFO, acting
chief scientific
officer. Any comments from the department before we move?
We did the shortlisting for the board and submitted the shortlisted names to the minister's office, but with the absence of anyone from the office of the DG, you know, it's going to be difficult for me to say where exactly the process is.
So by law, you are able to pull together a strat plan document without the approval of the board.
Before I give to the company secretary, I think that there's two responses to the question. One is it's from a practical point of view. I'm going to deal with that one. I think the company secretary can deal with the question on a legal perspective. From a practical point of view, I don't think we we would have been acted ethically as the officials that I'm with in the company if we had said that there's nothing we can do because there is no blood. The board that we've had, it ceased to exist in October last year. And for practical reasons, there was no way that as an organization we were going to say that let's stop operating because there is no blood. The board plays an oversight role, and we just pray to God that whatever we would have done would have been in compliance with all the requirements that we have to comply with. But we could not stop operating because, I mean, we, for all practical reasons, we had an outbreak in December of referral fever vaccine, I mean, disease. So imagine a scenario where we would have said there is no blood and therefore we can't make vaccines available. But I'll allow the company secretary to deal with the question on the legal perspective. Thank you.
Thank you, Ayanda. I think I just want to go back to the issue of the board where we are at. I was called by the department.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. Good afternoon, members. I was called in by the department that was around some 3 weeks ago, and there was a confirmation that names were tabled before cabinet and those names were approved. So I am still awaiting the names so that we can register those directors retrospectively. However, nothing has come yet through from the department. So there is an assumption that they are indeed full board members which are appointed. And I take it it's about 7 members, but we don't have further information. And just to reiterate what Ayanda has said, yes, we had 3 members who ceased acting as board members on the 13th of October last year. However, the company had to continue operating as a business. And we took that decision as ESCO, that yes, we do have the capabilities. Yes, we have to be compliant with certain aspects, you know, from the Companies Act. And hence, we went ahead and prepared our straight plan, and hence, we continued operating as a business. But unfortunately, it has been difficult not having somebody having an oversight role over OBP.
Members?
For clarity, I was under the understanding that the previous chairman, Advocate Dave Mitchell, when has his term been terminated? Wasn't he the only member that was left off the board? And is he still in place?
Thank you, Dr. Honorable Bosman. He has come to an end on the 28th of February this year.
All what we need to do is to take a decision as to whether we continue receiving the presentation. That's all what I'm asking.
Chair, I would propose that we carry on with the listening to the presentation. I think it is for this committee to then decide on the way forward. But I would like to express my dismay of the process. I mean, at this stage, obviously, if the shortlisted people were nominated and the minister or in the process, there has been a delay so that there is no board present in place, then obviously there must be serious questions being asked in as far as the process is concerned to have a situation where there is no board in operation at this stage. But I think it doesn't take away the fact that the OBP must carry on with their work, and we as an oversight committee can have insight in their strategic plan. It's, I think from listening to the strategic plan, obviously we are in a position that we can also then exercise our oversight work, and when a new board comes into place, they will have to just carry on from where we are.
My only interest here is that we're dealing with a very, very important organization in this country. And the manner in which we are dealing with this organization, we are so shady. This is an organization that is supposed to be constituting, among others, a very important area of securing our lives and our nation. I'm not sure whether we understand what I'm talking about. Now imagine you are going to have, we've had, you know, those outbreaks already. And the responses that came from OBP, they were really not so much prompt, you know, to be quite blunt, because of your own internal. Now, if you were to have had those outbreaks spreading like wildfire, you would then have had a situation where the nation dies, because people have died in the process, somewhere in Northern Cape and Northwest, I think. Now, that's what I want to refer to, department. The minister is not doing us any good service, that's all I'm saying. Because we did go through a process here of interviewing and shortlisted, and it takes this much time. Members, I think we shall then have to continue. Mama, you wanted to say something?
Yes, Chairperson. I just wanted to support what Honorable Dr. Bosman has said, that let's continue and listen to OBP so that we have an insight of what is happening there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honorable Members. With that as a background of how we've performed as an, or the conditions under which we performed as an organization, these are the results. It's a preview. They've not been audited. I know that the auditors are here, but these are just numbers that we based on the invoices that we've actually made to date. And this is as at yesterday, close of business, on the 28th of March, 2011. But we have can I apologize that you don't have this page, this specific page. We've just opted to include this page as a background to the strategy document going forward. But you don't have this. It's just the first page that you don't have. I apologize for that.
Can you make copies, if you don't mind? Where is your assistant? Do you have it there, first page?
No.
Do you have the hard copy somewhere of that first page?
No. Someone will have to print it in the presentation.
And save it on that.
I apologize. As it shows there, these are results as of 28th March 2011, which would have been yesterday.
Now you copy.
Yes, in the presentation. With your permission, Chairperson Watts, they are still printing the first page of the presentation. I can go ahead and share the results. As of yesterday, on the 28th of March, we had made about 158 million rand in revenue. This is against a budget of 94 million for the year. And it's actually 68% above the budget to date, and it's 64 million rand above the budget. And it's also 58% or 58 million rand above the 2010 financial year's revenue. And if you compare now, we had the revenue as at the end of February on the year-to-date, 134 million versus 85 million rand in the 2010 financial year in the same period, which is which is about 49 million rand better off than the sales from last year, February to February. And in the month of March, we had made about 20 million rand in the local sales and 4 million rand in export sales. And then this means that we, in fact, the sales volume is indicating that more animals have been vaccinated, especially if you look in the context of the South African market. I mean, 128 million rands of sales were made versus 30 million rands in the export market. And I think at this point I'm going to extend all this appreciation and gratitude to the people and to the officials in the department who, when there was even before the outbreak of the Rift Valley fever disease, there were awareness campaigns that were actually taking place throughout the country. And I think people had the message, and especially having the experience of the 2019 outbreak, in that it made them aware that their money is locked up in their animals, and therefore they had to actually protect them. And then on the comparing now, at the end of February, because this month has not yet been closed, we still have tomorrow to go. The gross profit on the results up to February, we were about 69.5% or 109.8 million. And this is 54% more than 54% of the revenue for the 2010, the whole of the 2010 financial year. But the 109.8 million, it's 11 months, whilst the 54 million for the 2010 financial year is actually for a full 12 months. And on this gross profit, in fact, I recall in 2008 when the Honorable Mr. Abram said that if you guys are making around that time we were making about 33% in gross profit. And he made the comment, or he remarked that as an institution, you're not going to last very long if that's what you have as a gross profit. And from 34% to about 69.5% in 2011, and you're only looking at the first 11 months of the financial year. And the market norm, if I would add, is actually 60% in the pharmaceutical. Your gross profit is normally 60%, and we are talking as OVP about 69.5% that we've made as a margin. Which then means that we've actually, one of the things that we promised to do when Mr. Nga remarked that we are actually going to turn around the organization in 2008, one of the things that we said we needed to do is to reduce costs, increase efficiencies in the business. And these results are actually talking to them. And I mean, some of the things that we have recognized as an institution is that in the actual production of the products, employees do not work right through the 8 hours in actually producing the product. So there's available capacity within the 8 hours that we said, how do we then ensure that without using overtime, how do we make sure that within the within the amount of time that is allocated, the 8 hours normal per day, how do we make sure that we actually maximize the value that we get out of that? So we did that, and that speaks to that 69.5% gross profit that we've actually achieved. And if you look at the operating profit, I mean 19% of revenue, or 30 million rand, and this is at the end of February. I'm not including this financial month that I'm saying we've already made about 24 million already in revenue. And I've put there that we've actually turned the corner as an institution. And I mean, we've made 22 million rand, or we've generated 22 million rand. And this signifies, or it tells you a story that we actually don't depend on the balance sheet to fund the operations of the business. We've actually funded that. I mean, operations have actually funded themselves. So that's the background against which the strategy document that I'm going to be presenting before you has been prepared. Briefly going through this, who OVP is, the company was incorporated in 2000, and it was incorporated in terms of the OVP Incorporation Act. And this act, what it dealt with, it was purely to move away the company from the Department of Agriculture, from being a directorate to a private operating making entity as a Schedule CB, if you will. Our facilities are old, some of them built built in 1968. And one of the things that we're talking to in the document is the need to actually capitalize the facility. And so I'm quite happy to hear that the process has quite moved to actually get the board on as part of the, or to get the board on board, if you will. And because we've got one of the, I mean, we could have done more, and we're going to be sitting with a crisis, almost the same problem that Eskom faced, and I would not want to be associated with that, because we've got the funds, we've set aside funds to actually procure equipment, but we are hamstrung by the requirements of the PFMA, or the delegation of authority. That is, us within the executive team, we cannot actually approve those amounts. And one of the questions that I've been sitting with now, as the acting CEO, together with the team, is what do we do? Do we go ahead and procure the equipment and then face the music that we've actually gone and bought the equipment and the figures that we're talking about are outside the delegated authority? That's one of the questions that we've had to answer. Or we say that, no, let's not do this in order to avoid going to jail, because, I mean, we could be held accountable for spending money beyond the delegated authority that we have. And then if the problem happens, like the outages that we had as a country, if it so happens that the equipment fails, I mean, I've got some of the pictures where one of the equipment was almost hit me as I was taking a picture of it, because it was actually falling. And one of the things that we could be facing as a country is that we don't have vaccines available. And the only reason for that is not that we did not have money available. We had the money available, but because we did not have the delegated authority to actually do that. So those are some of the challenges that we faced as an institution. In fact, we're still facing as an institution. And the product portfolio, we've got over 50 products which are specific to actually the local need. And the revenue growth of the company over the past 3 years, year on year, has been about 15%. Now, this looks at the up until the March 2010 financial year. Because if when you include the impact of this year's performance, that amount is actually going to go up in the region of 23%. And we achieved that milestone of 100 million in sales in the 2010 financial year. And as I've indicated in the preview to the results of 2010, we are talking about 158 million. So we've got another milestone that we will be quickly reflecting in this report when we're actually writing them going forward. And lastly, you will recall, Honorable Chairperson, when you delivered the keynote address on the launch of the four products that we came up with in the institution together with the partners that have assisted us in the process. And those products have done extremely, extremely well. I mean, if I mention Clone 13, almost no one wants to buy the other Rift Valley Fever products that we've had because everyone wants to go for the Clone 13. So that's how our products have actually done in the market. And we've got 205 employees current as it stands. We've dealt with the matter of the board. And then this is the current structure that we have in the organization, with the minister as the shareholder, and then the board of directors that we are awaiting the communication of their names, and then the position of the managing director, in which I'm acting currently as the CEO, and then the personal assistant, the internal auditor, and then we've got, and the internal auditor we still have, once we've got the board, because at most the function reports to the audit committee. So you need to make sure that whoever gets appointed there, the audit committee is comfortable. So we also have that problem, of which the external auditors will be reflecting come the end of the financial year. The whole matter of the board, the whole matter of the internal audit function, I'm just forewarning you so that when in October we come here to present the annual report, at least we know about these things, the whole issue of the board, the whole issue of the internal audit, because it's non-compliant and the auditors are going to report on that. And then we've got the company secretary and the function of company secretariat and legal services. And then some of the executives, you've got the strategic projects and planning, you've got the COO, you've got the CSO, you've got the BDO, you've got the quality executive, the chief financial officer, and then the HR executive. The institution exists to prevent and control animal diseases that impact food security, human health, and livelihood. This is really, really important. I can never overemphasize its importance. Because that's the sole reason for which the organization exists. And so whatever we do is informed by that. Whatever we're trying to do as an institution, that's what we actually intend to make sure that we achieve. And our vision is to be a global biotech manufacturer of animal health products underpinned by a skilled, innovative, and passionate team. And we've got 7 strategic thrusts that we set ourselves to achieve in them in the 2009-10 financial year. And we're continuing with them because more than any other thing, they address the mandate for which the company exists to deliver. And that is to increase net operating profit, increase market share, build partnerships with provinces to gain access to rural farmers, a strategic vaccine bank in partnership with the department, funding for manufacturing plant, recapitalization, and GMP compliance. The development of new products, of which the ones that we launched in 2010 continue to actually make sure that we deliver on those. And then the development of human capital. I will touch on some of the activities that are actually taking place in order to make sure that we address all this. Honorable Chairperson, this is what you started with in your question. Do we continue with this process, given the fact that the institution did not have a board which would have informed this process? Because, amongst other things, this document is going to form the delivery agreement between OBP's board and the minister. So we have committed the board that we are awaiting to hear their name. And we will have the discussion to say that these are the things that we've committed on your behalf. We've considered the major developments and changes in the industry. both global and local. We have considered available internal resources required to ensure that we successfully implement the strategy. One of the things that we used to do in the past was to almost attempt to deliver on each and everything. Now we've said let's prioritize, because we've got very limited resources from where we're actually going, which will actually make sure that we are able to deliver on the promises that we're actually making. And then we said we need to ensure that OBG's alignment, we needed to ensure of OBG's alignment to the MTSF as well as the new growth path. Compliance to the PFMA framework. These are the review outcomes or strategic objectives. The first one is to ensure that OBG is sustainable in delivering on its mandate. So we have referred to the volume growth, improved margins, innovation, R&D investment, new markets, especially in the emerging sector as well as for exports, and the recapitalization of the facility to ensure that we are compliant to the GMP requirements. If I just mention one thing, why some on this requirement for the GMP compliance, and that is, notwithstanding the fact that the institution is not complying to GMP standards, we still have the ISO standards that we comply to. Our products have received almost an approval from all those that are using it. I mean, what has been happening is that in the European Union, we are not allowed to export our products into that market because they are not GMP compliant. But because we've got these good products, GMP is good manufacturing principles. So our products meet all practices. But it's the principles regarding to those practices. What it actually requires is that, in fact, what has been required is that the EU said that we needed our facilities to be GMP compliant in order for us to export our products there. But they said, you've got a good ISO system. We believe in the quality of your products. So they've asked the European Union. For example, Ireland is importing our products, notwithstanding the fact that they are not GMP compliant. They've got permits from the EU, a special permit to get our products. England is busy with that process in order to get our products. And China is making inquiries in order to get our products. If one were to look at the outlook for the business, it's pretty good. But there are certain groundwork that needs to be done in order to make sure that we actually deliver on this. And then human capital development and performance. Those are all the outcomes that will ensure that we deliver on the mandate of the institution. Now these are the results of that process, and that we've said these are the key strategic objectives that we are going to prioritize in this financial year, and that is to build an innovative, passionate, high-performance culture, to build a profitable, sustainable, and socially responsible biomanufacturing company. And then we are going to focus on the core competencies and unique strengths, products and know-how, to develop new products and leverage the strategic partnerships that actually exist. And these are the key financial key performance indicators. In the 2010-11 financial year, at the time when we were doing this document, we based on the budget of 95 million, and we said in the 2011-12 we want to achieve a revenue of 130 million, 141 million in 2012-13, and 157 million in 2013-14. And then the sales volume growth as a percentage, we said the target is 10%. In each of the financial year, and then the percentage cost of sales. We said, as I've indicated in the preview of the results, that the gross margin, the norm in the industry, is 60% of your sales. So we're saying that for the 11-12 financial year, we're aiming to achieve a gross margin of 64% or 36% cost of sales. And then we said in the 2012-13 financial year, we will keep that. And then in 2013-14, we said we'll improve by 4% and achieve a gross margin of 68%. And as I said, we did this document sometime last year, in the financial year. Therefore, the difference between this, I mean, if you look at the 69.5% that we're currently sitting on at the end of February this year. And then cost reduction in operating expenses. We said in the 2011-12 financial year, we need to achieve a 5%. In fact, the 5% across the three financial years. And then the percentage of operating profit, we said in the 2011-12 financial year, we said 10% or 13 million. And then in the 2012-13 financial year, we said 15% of revenue or 21.2 million. And then in the 2013-14 financial year, we want to achieve a 20% operating profit. On the non-financial key performance indicators, we said in the 2011-12 financial year, we need to have one new and improved vaccine developed and registered with Act 36, as well as in other countries. And then in the 2012-13 financial year, we said 2. And then in the 2013-14 financial year, we said 3. So in this 2010-11 financial year, if we consider that we launched 4 products against a target of 3 products, then that means those guys that were responsible for that have actually overachieved. And then in the number of doses of vaccines produced per year, we said in the 11-12 financial year, we're targeting 92.3 million, and then 100 million doses in the 12-13 financial year, and 107 million in the 2013-14 financial year. This is very important because that specific line, if one looks at the size of the livestock in South Africa, I mean, if you look at the breakdown of what makes up in terms of the over 50 products that I've indicated earlier in this document, and you take the breakdown of this, and you say, for example, if you take Clone 13, that product, we produce it in 100 mils. And if you take that product and look at the population size of the livestock in South Africa, in May 2010, we were talking about 40. Just plus minus 46 million in livestock. We're talking about 27 million in sheep, 13 million in cattle, and plus minus 6.3 million in goats. Now, if you take that product and you isolate it from these millions of doses that I've actually indicated, based on the forecast that we've actually came up with, it says that we're going to be covering about 74%. And that 74%... That's what we're going to produce in total. But when you look at that also caters for export. It's not only the South African market. So then you need to look at how many products, how many animals are actually going to be vaccinated. And these numbers may look high, but when you interrogate, if you take anthrax, we're going to be producing to cover about 7% of the animal population. Who's going to be covering for the rest? And one of the things is that we need to be working together as all these institutions, including the Department of Agriculture, to say that there's all these efforts that are actually taking place, all these activities that are being that are actually taking place. How do we make sure that at the end of the day, what we want to achieve is to make sure that almost all the animals that are in the country, both in the commercial and the non-commercial sector, are actually vaccinated. So those are some of the things that we need when we go into the implementation of it or seeing it true, seeing it happening, we need to make sure that we sit down, all of us, to see how we're actually going to implement them. And then on the training budget, we're saying that we're going to be spending 1.2 million in the 11-12 financial year, 1.3 million in the 12-13 financial year, and 1.5 million in the 2013-14 financial year. And then on the improvement of quality management systems, we're saying that by the 2011, in fact, in this coming financial year, we want to make sure that 20% of projects are actually on schedule. What we've done, all the activities that need to take place in order to ensure that we are actually compliant with that ISO standard, we've broken them down into projects. So we said, let's target 20% in the first financial year, 50% in the 2012-13 financial year, and 100%, or we need to be compliant by 2013-14 financial year. And then we said on the number of strategic partnerships with provincial governments targeting the emerging sector, we said we need to make sure that we are operational in this year in three provinces. The 11-12 financial year, six provinces, if you include the first one, and nine provinces by all the provinces in the country. And maybe later on, Dr. Modumo can refer to the activities that have been taking place with regards to this indicator or initiative, because we want to make sure that the most remote of the rural areas are actually covered. So we've got initiatives that are actually covering them. Now, this is the role that the institution continues to play in the economy. As an SOP, the institution strives to contribute towards economic growth and the creation of job opportunities, or creation of jobs. Now, with regards to the medium-term strategic framework and dealing with outcome fast, which deals with a skilled and capable workforce to support an inclusive growth path, we said that one of the things that we have in place is an internship and learnership program. And the last time we had a discussion, we had not secured funding from the department. But what we've said, we've seen the results of this initiative. I mean, we've got one of the employees that came out of this project, who came up with who assisted in an initiative to ensure that the institution saves costs. So we've seen that there's a significant benefit that one can actually achieve out of this. So one of the things that, as the executive, that we'll be looking at is how do we then ensure that out of the 158 million that we've generated, how do we make sure that if we don't secure funding, we still continue with the program. So that's one of the things that we're currently looking at. And then with regards to Outcome 7, which talks to the vibrant, equitable, sustainable rural communities that are contributing towards food security for all, one of the things which I was specifically referring to, that Dr. Modumo may talk in detail should there need to be, is the use of distributors that are located in remote rural areas, where we're going to assist either by making fridges available and then providing vaccines so that the people can actually sell them in those rural areas that are actually situated in, and also supplying information so that they will know how to actually use the vaccine. And then on the new growth path, job driver number two, which is improving job creation in the economic sector, the agricultural value chain and manufacturing. Then job driver number three, seizing the potential of new economies, the knowledge economy, OBP plays a role in that. And then on the DAF strategic objectives as well, as the DG would have shared with them earlier. Then this next slide details or illustrates the alignment of what OBP does to the programs of government. Perhaps I'll go to the next slide, but it explains what this slide is all about. On the new growth path in improving job creation in economic sectors, we say that animal health plays an important role in the sector's outputs and productivity. Therefore, vaccines are most important and cost-effective solution of preventing infectious diseases. And our role is to ensure that the vaccines are actually available. And then on the strategy, we say that we're going to improve manufacturing efficiencies, the 8% improvement in gross margin. Normally, when you increase your fees, you tend to do that at an additional cost. But if you compare the results that I've just said earlier, I mean, I spoke about 69% gross margin, and we're saying that we are going to continue looking at how do we ensure that the cost that we're incurring in salaries, for example, and the maintenance of the equipment, how do we make sure that we increase the return of that by increasing the output from both of those enablers. And then we're saying that we are going to improve the availability of products. With regards to the clone 13, the Rift Valley fever, for example, one of the problems was that OBP does not have products when livestock owners or farmers need the products. So we asked ourselves, and this has come up in the 2006 survey that was done by one organization, and also in 2008. One key concern for the livestock owners was that OBP does not have products available when they actually need them. And we've said, if we don't achieve that, if we don't address that, then there's no reason for us to exist as an organization, because that's the core of what the organization exists to actually deliver on. And therefore, we said we need to make sure that we achieve as a minimum 85% of planned versus actual sales forecast. We say that the sales department is going to indicate to us, and also history tells us, how much vaccines have been procured by livestock owner. And on the basis of that, we say all those products, we must always ensure that, in fact, one in addition to this, what we said is the top 20 or the top 18 products must always be available when they are needed in the market. So we've said we are going to, what it then means is that we're going to produce to the forecast, but on top of that, we're going to add what you would call risk stock. So that in the event that the forecast is less than the actual demand for the product, then we ensure that we've got the product available. And then we're saying that we intend to achieve a 5% reduction in operating costs. And we're saying that there's an opportunity in the feedlots, the emerging sector, as well as the export markets, and therefore we're going to take advantage of that. And we're saying that in order for the institution to be sustainable, we need to make sure that we have the facility, a GMP-compliant facility, and therefore initiatives are in place to ensure that by the time the board comes on board, we have all the necessary information for them. Or by the end of June this year, we have all the necessary information in order to ensure that we have this facility in place. Because this GMP facility has been talked about for quite a number of years. From the documents that I've seen, it dates as far back as 2000, and up to date, we still have not done anything. And therefore, this is a key priority for us to ensure that it is actually addressed. And once we have that, it's going to address, amongst other things, the coverage of almost all the animals that are in South Africa. If they have to be vaccinated, then we will have vaccines for them available so that they can be vaccinated. But it also opens doors for South Africa, or for OBP, if you will, to actually access the export market. And as I've indicated, the export market needs our products or demands our products, and it's incumbent upon us to actually respond to them. And we're saying that with regards to local manufacturing, we're going to preserve primary and secondary job opportunities. We're going to create new job opportunities to support growth. We're going to, with regards to the exports, if we have this facility, then it's going to contribute to a positive trade balance. And I know from the documents that, or from the DG's presentation, I mean, one of the things that you referred to was EPUB 2. So we've got a role to play as OVP, and also the strategies of the Department of Rural Development, the strategies of the Department of Science and Technology. There's a role that we have seen as an institution that we actually can play. Then the facilities need to be recapitalized. And we said that to the extent that we have funds available, we need to make sure that we actually do that ourselves. But in the event that the funds, the funds that we have available are not sufficient to actually meet these expenditures, then we will be looking at for example, our shareholder or the government in the form of the IBC, if we have to go and talk to them. Those are doors that are actually, that we are going to be considering knocking on. Now, with regards to the recapitalization or replacement of old critical equipment to ensure security of vaccine supply, and this is what I've referred to, the recapitalization of current manufacturing facilities. For this 2011-12 financial year, we've set aside we can fund 48.3 million out of the revenue that we've generated as the organization. But that's what we're going to need in the 11-12 financial year. Then in 12-13, we're going to need 42 million. In 2013-14, we're going to need 29.8 million. And this works out the total over the 3 years to 120.1 million rand. And as I've indicated, that the GMP project will actually assist us in accessing the key export market. And the process is that there's about three institutions that have done an analysis with regards to if we were to have the GMP facilities, what are the options that we have? And so we're going to be looking at those reports, but we need to ensure that the quality system which is catered for in whatever facility we're going to have. And we're also going to look at the products that we have. Do we have to cater for all the vaccines that we are producing? I mean, I reflected that we've got over 50 products. If we are going to say that we are going to create a facility that is going to cater for all 50 products, the cost implications with regards to them, and then the opportunities that will actually open for us should we have this facility. So that's the process that's going to inform that's going to inform how we're going to go about this the GMP project. And we will come up with funding models, and we will have with the assistance of the finance team and capacity. Should we not have internal, we will source capacity outside, so to ensure that however we want this project to be done, that it's actually sustainable, so that if we are to get funds, we don't come here every single year to actually ask you that you assist us with funds. And that's the process, to ensure that we'll have to have management approval, the board, and the executive authority. And this is by September 2011. And still continuing now, the role that OPP plays in the economy with regards to R&D to drive the knowledge economy. OPP is actually a global leader in application of biotechnology. And we're going to make sure that we continue to bring to the market tropical diseases vaccines, and we've done this for the past 4 years, and we acknowledge that the industry is driven by innovation, and therefore as an institution we need to make sure that we also play ball. With regards to the strategy of OBP is that we increase internal R&D funding. And we've said that we're going to commit of the revenue that we're going to generate, 10% of that is going to be funding R&D. and the outputs that we're looking for once we've invested these funds, we're going to be needing 6 new products in the next 3 years. And we want to make sure that we leverage South Africa's research capacity, investments and outputs towards commercially viable IP and products. And we are going to partner globally for technologies that are enabling competitiveness and growth. Now, with regards to skills development, OPP intends to ensure that there's access to scientific knowledge, that the war over animal diseases is won, that to ensure that there is food safety and security in the country. And we want to ensure that we actually alleviate poverty. Now, with regards to how we're going to be doing this, we're going to improve internal human capital development. The funding, we're targeting 1% of revenue. And then with regards to the learnership program, the target is 30 in 3 years. And with the internship program, it's the same. But we must have had a minimum of 30 either students or employees within the program or learners in the program. Now, with regards to rural economic development, a significant number of livestock ownership in rural communities has not been explored, and that's wealth. It's not only wealth for those people, but it also represents a growth in the revenue of OBP, and this it reflects the economic opportunity that actually exists, and therefore, what OBP is going to do, we're going to be sharing information and providing training to rural farmers through the provincial department of agriculture. And as I've indicated, the point that Dr. Mudume may talk to in detail, should there be a need, is that the rural distribution points in rural areas, which the results of is going to be the creation of job opportunities for those that will actually be carrying this out. And it will also increase the number of animals that will actually be vaccinated. Then on the financial projections, this is the summary. For the 2019 financial year, that's the year that ended in March last year, we achieved a revenue of 100 million. In the 2010-11 financial year, we had a budget of 95 million. We stretched it to 141 million, and then we stretched it again to 141 million, and we stretched it again to 151.1 million. And as I've indicated, we are currently sitting at 158 million as of yesterday. So that's what we would, in all likelihood, achieve by the end of business tomorrow. So now for this coming financial year, or the year under the spotlight, we're looking at 130 million and 143 million in the 2012-13 financial year, and then 157.9 million in the 2013 financial year. So that this reflects a 10% growth in vaccine usage that we are expecting. And this number is very conservative. The Honorable Mr. Abrams reflected when they were at OPP in October last year, when they were looking at the results, when we were sharing the results with them, that this institution, we should be targeting 250 million. And as we were chatting when we were having breakfast this morning, I said to my colleagues, actually, we can look at 500 million in the next 3 to 5 years. As an organization, and this is informed by the size of the livestock in South Africa. If we push the point that everyone must vaccinate, put differently, if you don't look at it in the form of revenue, but rather you look at the number of animals that must be vaccinated, and then you have to express that in terms of revenue that one will be making. If you're saying that let's vaccinate all the animals, then almost half a billion, that's what OBP will actually be making. And the half a billion that I was referring to, I mean, I understand that the livestock
size in China is huge. They've mentioned numbers like 200 million in cattle. If we get 20% of that, when because they are making inquiries to actually buy our products, and therefore if we supply them up to that extent, then the 500 million is probably also conservative. But all these things are impossible if we don't recapitalize the facilities and we get the facilities to be GMP compliant. And then with regards to the gross profit or the gross margin, the industry norm is 60%. So we're saying that we achieved 54% in the 2019 financial year, and we are looking at 60%. In fact, we said for this current financial year that ends tomorrow, we're looking at 60%, and as I've reported, at the end of February, we were sitting at 69.5%. And in the coming financial year, the 11-12 financial year, we're looking at 64%, almost an improvement of 4%, and then 68% in the 2013-14 financial year. And with regards to the operating profit, we made 16% in the 2009-10 financial year. In the 2010-11 financial year, the target is 20%. And the numbers that I reported earlier were 19%. So we are very close to that 20%. Hopefully that the sales, the revenue of 24 million that we've generated in this month, in March, would enable us to actually achieve that 1% to get to the 20% target. And then in the next coming financial year, in the 11-12, 12-13, and 13-14, we're aiming for 10%, 15%, and 20% respectively. With regards to research and development, the industry spends about 10% of the turnover. OBP spend about 2% in the 19 financial year. And we spend about, this financial year that ends tomorrow, we spend about 2%. And in the 11-12 financial year, we're saying that in order for us to achieve what we've indicated in the strategy, that we need to have six products that we would have put, six either improved or new products that we would have put or made available to the market, then it requires that we make more funds available. In response to that, we said we will make 7% over the next three, in each of the 3 years or the years under review. And then with regards to cash generation from operations, we in the 2019 financial year, we generated 19 million. And then in this 2010-11 financial year, we set ourselves to achieve 30 million. In the 11-12 financial year, we set ourselves to achieve 25 million. 12-13, 20 million. 13-14, 37 million. And this information that I've shared, it's a summary of this, the next three slides. The income statement, the balance sheet, as well as the cash flow statement. And then with regards to performance monitoring, we said that we need to ensure that the strategy is implemented effectively, and therefore we're looking at the impact of the strategic initiative. And in order for us to achieve this, we need to make sure that the key performance indicators are actually achieved, the strategic goals are achieved, the sustainability of the institution is actually ensured. And then we have a balanced scorecard that has actually been put in place, which is aligned to the organizational strategy. And this is going to form it's actually the basis for the individual performance contract that we will be signing with all the executives, and they in turn with their manager. And we're going to have in place, in fact, we have, and we're going to continue with the quarterly performance monitoring. And then the annual performance reporting as required in order to comply in terms of the treasury regulations as well as the predetermined objectives. And then this slide basically indicates who is responsible for what. In all the information that I've shared, in all the key strategic objectives that I've enlisted. This slide details who is responsible for what and when must what be delivered. And to conclude, the institution at an operational level has actually stabilized. And as I've said, the evidence is there in the growth in revenue as well as operating profit. But now we need to make sure that we invest these profits that we've made. And as I've indicated, that there are capital projects that we're going to fund ourselves. And therefore, we are responding to what we think that needs to be done as the organization. And so, as reflected here, the replacement of critical equipment to ensure that we still make vaccines available. And that, with regard to the emerging sector, that we provide support through the provincial government, and as well as making vaccines through rural distribution. And we are prioritizing skills development, and the learnership and internship programs are the means by which we are going to deliver on this. And the bursaries that we are making available, the increase in the training budget. And the GMP project, which is a high priority for OPP in the 11-12 financial year. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members, for allowing me the time to actually present this document. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nkosi. Well, what is clear, members, is that we can safely take no less than a day or two having to be with the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. Clearly, we did not conclude on a number of areas. As you go through listening, other areas are linked and other areas would not have been adequately responded to. I'm reminded as I'm seated here that we also would have been very privileged to have listened to the department saying something about its role in achieving your Millennium Development Goals. That did not come up at all. And there could be a few others that members might have had an interest in following up with the department. We have heard Mr. Nso presenting the entities, PMFA Section 3B, which is profit making, but still regarded as one of the important in terms of, you know, security of the country's areas or entities, which does qualify for some funding. Recapitalization. It does qualify. In other words, we are supposed to be adding some more resources to this very important institution in the security of our state. Where is Mr. CFO? I cannot see him here now. I thought to him when I was trying to make those emphases. I was also talking to him. I'm sure the COO is listening as well. I mean, we have a NEFA farm that continues to be funded, yet it is supposed to be a profit-making entity. Just to draw one parallel on one specific area to justify my point I'm making about a very important institution like this, and yet you have a NASA farm which is not as important as the one that we're dealing with. So our priorities seemingly are upside down, so we really need to do a lot more. Members, that is the presentation. I saw a hand of welcome, Mama Paliso. I forgot to mention that she was not going to be with us for a greater part of the day. She had to attend one important area of our work, a roundtable session on consultation on small scale fisheries policy that is working towards the deadline for tabling at the NEDLAC. Welcome, Mama. I saw your hand, sorry, Dr. Postman. Are you covered now with what I've just raised?
I'm happy. Sir, no, thank you. I would also be very brief because I think it's a very good report. First of all, I think we must really, and I agree with you, to thank the CEO with his staff for the excellent results that they've achieved over the past year. You remember that when we were there last time, we were looking at the previous results and we said that they should increase, and we think that what has happened now shows us that with the commitment with the staff and with the dedication that they have, they can obtain very good results, and I must actually congratulate them. What worries me, Chair, is obviously again, and I would like to just ask for clarity, in the process of the management, you will remember that the previous CEO, and that was one of our concerns at the previous meeting, was since last year about this time, still in not being dismissed after a tedious process, which I'm not going to go into. So my question is, first of all, how far has this process been finalized of appointing new management? Because as you've in the beginning stated, most of them are still acting, and it obviously puts stress on them. And I think we must put our concerns on the table, that we are really worried about the situation that the minister is not finalizing, despite the process being finalized long ago. Not only of the CEO, but also of the appointing of the new people on management, and then also the board. I mean, this is absolutely not acceptable, that we can run an institution, and what has been pointed out to us, that without the board, they are not mandated to make decisions on huge investment or capital investment or replacement or whatever the case may be, which will, in the end, catch up with the OVP when they do not are not able to replace equipment and do the necessary things that they need to. So just one or two other questions just for clarity. You will remember there was also an issue about the farmers' training processes through the Department of Agriculture and the OVP, their involvement into it, that there was talk of an external service provider that was approached with being paid quite a huge sum. Is this, how far is this process? Are we still looking at OVP being put into a position to do that job? That's the first one. And then also, I would also like to know, obviously marketing is a vital of vital importance to get the products out of the door. And I believe that there was a contract between the OVP and a service provider. Can we just get some information of is this agreement working? Is there results from it? Or what is the outcome of that agreement? Thank you, Chair.
Yes. Abram?
Thank you, Chairperson.
Followed by Mama Nyalungu.
Chairperson, one needs to place on record that if one has come a long way with some of these parastatals and seen how they have had tips at some stage and how they have improved, then I must say that the OVP has, under very difficult circumstances, done reasonably well. Don't want to tell them they've done very well. They've done reasonably well. That means they must work towards doing very well. Now, Chairperson, just a little piece of advice. In heaven's name, It is not worth taking the risk of doing things without due processes. So when the CEO said earlier that there are one of two ways, so I would say rather err on the side of caution. Rather have the authority, let the board be in place before you want to make any financial commitments, short-term or long-term or whatever. But Chairperson, there's something that worries me. You know, if this is the way the principals want to conduct an institution that on the one hand has to provide a strategic service, and on the other hand, has to see that it also generates revenue by, you know, allowing the institution to operate without a board of directors. Then, sir, there are danger signals. The red lights are flicking. But then again, Chairperson, the problem is that we don't seem to take institutions like this seriously, to see that things are timeously done, that it has all the required leadership in place. And I want to raise this concern, Chair, and say that this needs to be done very urgently. Now, Chairperson, we've got another problem. And that problem is that whilst we have OBP owned by the state, an institution which is internationally known, especially when you still had the old Honest to Poor laboratories and what have you, internationally known, as I say, there are still state departments that will source medication which is manufactured at OBP. From other sources. I don't know whether this is now because of economies of scale, or is it just that they want to source from somewhere else. But I think, Chairperson, charity begins at home. And we need to, from this portfolio committee, send out a clear message that we need to support this institution. We need to help build it further. And then, Chair, a question. And that is, Chair, that I understand that the GMP facility has been talked about since the year 2000. I can believe that, Chair, because I've been hearing it practically every year. Is there currently a serious attempt to evaluate the GMP requirements of this particular facility? Not by the people involved at OBP, but by the department as such. Is the department seeing this as a serious need? And then, Chairperson, with regard to some of the fact that efficiency has been increased in order to reduce costs, I want to congratulate OBP. We are seeing signs thereof. And, Chair, regarding capitalization for the facility, has OBP got a plan B in place? Is there something else that they believe they can do out of own sources to at least on a piecemeal basis try and capitalize itself, especially the infrastructural needs and requirements? A final point, Chair, is that, yes, you are looking at overseas markets, but you know when Rift Valley fever hit the country, one of the markets that you are looking at, China, immediately imposed a ban on importing South African wool. So one has to be very wary of who your friends are going to be. Will they be friends? What do they say? A friend in need is a friend indeed. Will they really be those? Thank you, Chair.
It would also be of interest if we were to get an update on that wool ban situation, and also the ban of our deciduous fruit in Thailand. If we can get a briefing quickly on that one. Maybe just of interest, I hear you saying that you certainly do have that money to capitalize on your new equipment that you want. Do you have any borrowing powers? I mean, I'm not too sure about what the regulation says about an institution like that. Having made such monies, I'm sure there should be a way of getting to say, let's incentivize ourselves as an executive. And what is the policy on any incentives, whether bonus or otherwise? And then having listened to what you're saying about, you know, an internship program, having to take 30, I think, a year in, over a period of 3 years, or 30 over a period of 3 years, my interest gets to be more on the I think 2% turnover of your staff employment having to be physically disabled or challenged. Whether what gets to be the situation, we missed on the department on this one as well. One went through to Mexico last year, December. At the airport there, you have literally in those two airports, Cancun and in Mexico City, people in wheelchairs, you know, being the ones that look at your boarding passes. You know, it was very beautiful to look at. So there is literally an extra effort to say those that are on wheelchairs, because the job really doesn't warrant anybody to be standing up and moving all over. You are just in one point. You have your scanning facility here. Anybody who comes through, the cameras are looking in so that you don't get somebody who can overpower you. Of course, it's a security around as well. So that's a job, obviously, for those kinds of people. But I'm sure you have a certain number of points raised by Dr. Bosman about Dr. Jaffe has been ongoing for a while. It will be very important that we also get, you know, to see the light at the end of that tunnel. I'm not too sure what color that tunnel is this day and age. And then the last one for me, with the partnerships that you have, you have made mention of a provincial and also going to do some work worldwide. Your distributors in the rural areas, as far as I understand, your distributor is a company, wholly owned German company that is based in South Africa called Bayer. Don't we have any locals, and especially that are black economic empowered? And why are we not making use of those?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and the Honorable Members for the question. I'm actually going to be distributing the questions along my amongst my colleagues. But I'll probably take the common question, the congratulations from the Honorable Dr. Bosman, as well as the congratulations as well from the Honorable Mr. Salam Ibrahim. And I'm going to convey the message to the staff of OBD, because they are the ones that have actually made sure that whatever we come to share here as a result that the institution has achieved, they are the ones that that have managed to actually make sure that we achieve those results. So we will share those results. And also with regards to Mr. Ibrahim, on the advice that we rather err on the side of caution, we will take that advice. And then there are questions that I'm imagining that
they are actually going to be responded to by officials from the department. I'm not sure if I'm qualified to allocate questions to the department, but because the questions were actually meant for the department, I'm not going to attempt to answer them, but I will leave them to the department. But I'm going to ask if Dr. Modumo can actually respond to the distributorships as well as distributorships in the rural communities and the use of a probably local distributor that is BEE compliant, and then to if you can perhaps respond to a marketing or distribution contract that the Honourable Dr. Bosman asked. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honourable Members. If you can recall, in the last, I think, 6 years, since from 2005 up until 2008, OBP has actually lost plus or minus 20% of market share. And the environment in which we participate is extremely aggressive, whereby we compete with international companies with a budget of over 25 to 30 million US dollars. And the budget that I manage, or that will be managed, the maximum has been 2.5 million rands to 3 million rands. So it doesn't even come near our competitors' budget. And the product range that we use, I know that we normally consider ourselves as a pharmaceutical company, but basically we are just a biological production manufacturing company, specifically on vaccines. And if ever you can look at the percentage of the vaccine segment, it's so negligible within the whole range of the pharmaceutical company, which simply means when you look at your profit margins, they don't actually contribute much, and you are already at a disadvantage. Now, coming to your question on why did we consider an international companies to partner with OBP? It was more from a strategic point of view. We did actually segment our market according to our distributorship. From the co-op, which are probably to use the name that you might be familiar with, they look like pharmacies. And then we have the another segment that we call veterinarians, that we normally, OBP, we distribute personally. And then we also have other distributor points from certain species, like the poultry market. And we also have other distributors, which are, of course, black-owned. They normally even export, like AutoSave, that normally do excellent business in Japan, and they've grown the market by more than 50%. Now, when you look at our product range and the markets that we want to penetrate, which is unfortunately very aggressive, and in the last 10 years, the rate cut has been used so many times that they use it as a barrier for us to penetrate that market. And you know, being state-owned companies, and anything that actually happens by government, and unfortunately, it normally affects even companies like OBP. We were forced, because of the market share that we are repeatedly losing, that we need a product basket, that we especially branded products that we need to sell to that specific commercial sector of the market that we're actually losing. And in 2009-2010, we decided from a strategic point of view that we have to come up with a defensive strategy. And that defensive strategy was for us to protect our products from point of sale, which was at the co-op level. And we realized that irrespective of all the investment that we've done in the last 10 years, we were losing out. And after we had our market survey, it was pointed out that you are being targeted at point of sale. That's where now we had to refocus and make sure that we invested our efforts more at distributor level, which was more at the co-op, to not only to to be visible, but to also manage our stock at distributor level. And in the last, I think, 2 years, that strategy actually worked and we benefited a lot. Now, when you sell vaccines, you don't just sell a product. Farmers want to use a vaccine, and they want to use a dip. They also want to use a dewormer. So you have to have a partner who can provide your farmers with a whole set of basket of product. So it was from that point of view that we managed to put up a strategy that we presented to the board, that the board actually agreed that for the interim, while you are still coming up with a defensive strategy to protect your market and also to make sure that in the next coming 2 years, which is our second year this year and next year, is to make sure that we grow and also we consider other forms of distribution network. So now that we have the figures and we've made a lot of inroads, especially at the co-op level, unfortunately we don't have a board for them to give us a new direction of where we are supposed to go with regard to distribution. We do have proposal that we think we need to put in place to the board. Be it we have to go and tender for other companies in South Africa to come and tender for that, is for the board to give us direction in that in that respect. On the question of the product to the emerging sector, especially with government, we have made proposal to all the provinces, and the aim of the objective of that proposal was for us to assist provinces in speeding up their service delivery, especially to this, or whatever we call them, whether it's a medium farmer, smallholder farmers. But our intention is for us to assist government speed up service delivery in terms of animal disease management. And we have realized that product accessibility is quite a challenge, especially in the rural areas. And we are now coming up with animal health center points, which we are going to make use as point of distribution and point of accessibility, especially to the rural areas. We will partner with provinces for them to identify an entrepreneur, but it has to be right in the rural areas, whereby as OBP we have a budget for fridges because it's a cold chain management product, and then we'll supply them with a vaccine. We don't want to spoil them, but we'll give them at a very reasonable price, and we'll give them a lot of marketing support, and also to try to launch their product. And then another initiative that we have with provinces is for the provinces to identify villages, and as part and parcel of government, we will try to have a budget of vaccines that will supply to those identified villages by the provinces. And on that day, we'll go and train and even vaccinate for free. Now, it's up to the provinces to identify those type of villages that they know that it's more of disadvantage, small pharmacies. So what actually happened to Rivelli fever a year ago, it affected very small-scale farmers. And out of that, we realized that we have to come up with something to assist certain types of villages. So it is for that reason that we have decided that though we have been sponsoring other organizations, we would rather shift those resources so that we can then try to facilitate and speed up a safe delivery at emerging level. Thank you.
Thank you, Doc. On the next question, the one was clarification on whether I said we've got funds available for some of the equipment that we need to procure. The answer is yes. We do have funds that we've actually set aside. And then with regards to the internship program, is it 30 per annum or the 30 is spread over the 3 years? The answer is 10 per annum or 30 over the 3 years. And then And then there's the question about how far is the process with the managing director. I think the department would be better qualified to respond on that question. And then and also with regards to the question on whether the department has made any serious attempts to determine whether there is a need for the institution to have a GMP compliant facility, the department can respond to that question. I will leave it to them. Thank you.
Gigi?
Chair, thank you very much. And I will respond on behalf of the department, as the DGG have just come back from another program back into the department. Can I start with the easier one, which is on the GMP? We did put a proposal to Treasury. I think the acting CEO is aware of that. I think I'll have to follow up on that. We did actually indicate there were two strategic areas where we have identified with Treasury on recapitalizing the OBP. One is on the GMP compliance, and the other one is on vaccine bank. Treasury did understand. I would have to follow up on that because I was in another program to check as to how far they've gone. But there was a proposal of looking into that for the coming MTSF cycle. So I think we'll be able to provide the portfolio committee and other members with the response to that. With regard to the issue of the CEO, I've just been mandated to follow up on that. Recently been mandated to negotiate that. Probably maybe after 2 weeks we can give the portfolio committee a progress on that. In addition to what Dr. Mudumo just mentioned regarding some of the initiative with the OBP, we are working in partnership on the primary animal health care, which is looking at the strategic vaccines which are produced by the OBP, like lumpy skin disease, the issue around Rift Valley fever. We're looking into Sheepscape, where we will be partnering to ensure that the rural areas are provided with the vaccine. We did receive funds from Treasury to deal with that. With regard to the issue on the wool ban, we did actually receive the Chinese in South Africa. They were here. They interacted with the department and the industry. They have not compiled a report. They did provide us with feedback in the meeting. They are supposed to be providing with a report, but they had a concern around the scientific aspects of the survival of the mosquito eggs and that of the Rift Valley fever virus. And they wanted us to actually provide them with more information because there was a discussion and a point of difference with regard to the survival of the virus in eggs and also in ideal conditions. So there's that outstanding information which we are being assisted by some scientists to actually to compile the report to and provide it to the Chinese. Hopefully, we are hoping that they'll be able to come back to us with this regard. Remember that also the issue now, the new issue with regard to the wool export is now the one on the outbreak of foot and mouth disease now. So most of the countries actually have instituted a ban with regard to animals and animal products. So for China now, it will mean that it will be Rift Valley fever and FMD. So they might end up sending another technical team to come and evaluate our FMD controls so that we can be able to resuscitate the export. With regard to the question which has been asked about Thailand, on the grapes, we did actually finalize our technical report. There is an outstanding visit for the political head to actually go and negotiate with Thailand on the export of table grapes. I think just to highlight this important factor that the We recently received information from the table grape producers where in the market of the Japan, where they've actually indicated that they're no longer interested in the market. And that was a concern for us because there's been a lot of offers from our side. This happened before the tsunami. But I think they did not provide us with reasons, but we'll be also engaging them on this, the export of the table grapes. I take that I covered all the questions. Thank you. There were questions around the finalization of the CEO. There was a question on the recapitalization of the OVP. There was also a question around the appointment of the board, and also the question around the export of wool and a question on export of grapes. I've covered those. Thank you.
You want to respond on any of those? Because what we did get on Dr. Jass's situation, that the matter is still outstanding, and also about the board of OVP. What I would have wanted to say, members, is that we give the department until the 18th of April to get back to us on all of these matters, both the CEO and also on the board situation. The following day, we are expecting, you know, a budget board debate. I'm not too sure whether we are agreed. Mama Paliso, OVP still hasn't got a confirmed board. And also, the CEO of OVP has been suspended for a while. So what I'm proposing is that we agree, if we agree, of course, as a proposal, that by the 18th of April, we get a feedback on these two areas. Both the finalization of the CEO's situation, who has been suspended, and also of the appointment of the board. You want to respond?
Thank you, Chair. I think that's a enough timeline. We can implement it. All I can say is that with regard to the board has been taken through the cabinet process. There was agreement on the suggested names that the minister put through to cabinet. There was only just a suggestion around who should chair the board, and that was what has been doing the process. The suggested name, cabinet felt that the person would be too busy to execute that task. So we are in the process of submitting another name. I think the other name has been submitted. So all the method processes of cabinet concurrence have been addressed with regard to this. That issue of finalization. It is in the hands of the minister. One hopes that within the next 2 weeks or so, it will be finalized. These are one of the urgent things that he said he should attend to, including the issue of the CEO. So I'm actually executing the final management of that aspect so that when he comes from overseas at the end of this week, I can report your progress on how we help to manage the situation. Otherwise, all the final things around it are here carefully, but he asked me to assist him. It's not my responsibility, the minister's responsibility, but he does help, ask me to help him manage it, and I do want to do it for him now.
We did express our displeasure on the delay, especially on the appointment of the board, because the matter is serious in such a manner that you cannot have an operation like this to operate, to execute its responsibilities without a board. So I just thought, let me just indicate that to you. Do you still have other questions that still needed to be responded to? Acting CEO, borrowing powers, bonus and physical challenge and so on and so forth, among others.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. With regard to whether OBB has a plan B, specifically with the funding of the GMP facility, in one of the things that I indicated in my presentation was that once we've arrived at the division would have been informed by the by financing model, an efficient and sustainable financing model. And that model, amongst other things, is going to look at the alternative sources of funding. So do we have a plan B in the event that we don't get the funds from either from Treasury? One of the institutions, as I've indicated, is that we will be talking to the IDC as well. But we're going to be looking at first, our point of call is going to be the department first, or Treasury through the department. And as Dr. Mohajan has correctly indicated, a process had been actually initiated. I recall we made the presentation together with her and some of my colleagues in the organization in 2008. So we will be doing that with her to actually follow up with the department. And then on the question of people with disabilities as to whether we have them in the employ of the organization or going forward, are we considering having them? I'm not in a position to respond to that question, and I apologize. We will be providing an answer to that question as soon as we get back to the office. And then the next question was from the Honorable Dr. Bosman, as to whether what happened with regards to the training that was to be provided by a private institution, what is the status with that? And I'm going to ask if the department could assist in responding to that question, because the invoice was not meant for OBD to actually provide the service. So the intention of a relationship would have been between the department and the consent in the private institution, so the department can actually assist with that question. And the last question then that would be outstanding for OBP to respond to or comment is that especially with regard to the ban by the Chinese of our wool products. And therefore, as OPP, we need to be wary of the partners that we're looking at. We will be doing that. We will take that into consideration. And thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
You seem to be avoiding questions that relate to yourself. Your bonus and borrowing powers. I guess I seem to have heard you saying something about IDC. By implication, you do borrow from the capital market. Obviously, yeah, these procedures.
With regards to bonuses, I think that's the question that can be responded to by the board.
It's not here.
Yes, when the board is in place, it actually responds to that question. Honorable Chairperson, thank you.
So the simple answer is on the affirmative. Okay, you want to conclude on the responses?
Well, in our daily work, we interact with all sorts of stakeholders, including people who want to work for us. We listen to them, we sometimes give them work, we sometimes don't, depending on the situation. At this stage, we are not giving work to anyone to do extension work for us. We have not taken that decision, we have not done it. We will see, maybe as we implement our program and there's intensity of demand and we are unable to meet that demand, we might explore other options. But right now, we are going to our business with our own capacity.
Okay.
expenditure.
Okay. Members, that is the final. If there are any further questions, I take it we should go straight to ARC. Thanks for the presentation, Mr. Ncho and your team. And I take it that you're also going to be at liberty to join others and listen to them as they've been listening to you. Thank you.
We can only benefit, Honorable Chairman. Thank you.
Maybe let's just quickly, you know, 5-10 minutes stretch and then grab whatever tea and then come back. Let's be back here by 4:15.
Michael Kahn, who chairs our Research and Development Committee. I just wanted to make some opening comments before actually turning to the business plan itself and to say that at the same point last year, the ALC found itself in the same position as OBP did this morning, in the sense that the term of office of the previous councillor had come to an end in October of the previous year, and the current chair hadn't been appointed, the current council had not been appointed. We were only appointed in June of last year. So we were a relatively new council coming to terms with what we found on the table when we took office. In that context, of course, like in the case of OBP, the ALC executive managers had to manage the ship without the benefit of having a council. And in that process, they went ahead and developed and tabled last year a new strategic plan for a five-year period, a strategic plan for the 2010-11 to the 2014-15 financial year. So that was tabled with this committee last year, along with the business plan for the first year of the five-year strategic period. In other words, the business plan for the 2010-11 financial year. So what we are tabling today is the business plan for the second year of the five-year period. So we are not tabling a new strategic plan today. We are tabling the second business plan in terms of the implementation of the old strategic plan. By its very nature, this business plan will be a transitional one in the sense that it's a holding operation in part, partly because a number of new government initiatives have come online. There's a new growth path. There's the new strategic plan of the Department of Agriculture, which was tabled this morning, which we need to absorb and respond to in very many ways. And there are a whole range of new priorities that our current strategic plan, by its very nature, doesn't address sufficiently. So we will, as council, probably be engaging with management in the course of the coming financial year around the development of an amended or an entirely new strategic plan for the period going forward. And so against this background, the current business plan that we are tabling for 2011-12 is, as I'm indicating by its very nature, a transitional one. I am not going to go into any of the details around some of the changes we anticipate, because I think we will probably want to come back to this committee next year with a much more detailed proposal around our strategy going forward and the extent to which we respond to the various issues that were raised also this morning with regard to alignment between the national R&D agenda and the priorities as they're reflected in the work of the ARC. So I'll hold it there for the moment, Chair, Honourable Chair. I might come back and make some comments again at the end. But at this stage, I would like to invite Dr. Shedrack Mufudi, our CEO, to share with you the current business plan. Thank you.
We never get to know the full complement of any of the boards that come to Parliament. No, they are here, those that are here, but you see here only a few being mentioned, but as far as I know, you certainly do have other members of the board that you never get to know. I'm not too sure how it works, except that at the end of the day, you might be able to get to know as to who else is serving in the board. I would imagine a similar question would have arisen if there was a board for OVP. Now, the reason why I'm raising this point is also because you might wish to make use in your own constituency area of a number of these board members that sit in this board. If we were to be knowing them, in your area, you know, you'd be able to say, instead of directly being linked up with Dr. Mufudi, you know, here is this person in my constituency area, and so on and so forth. I'm sure for other, you know, added benefits, if you wish, if it is possible, just for you to say, you know, the full complement, and then, of course, they are not here. I also don't know how you might wish to, you know, get to present them to this committee in future, and I'm sure so it goes for the rest.
Yes, Chair. I mean, it's perhaps something we should take responsibility for. We have a very large board. We have a 16-member council. So for this occasion, we decided to invite only the executive members. But perhaps in one of the future interactions, it would be good if we liaise in advance. I'm not sure it would be an expensive undertaking, but we could certainly bring the entire board along for an engagement. If it will help, I can very briefly run through a one-sentence outline of each of the members of the board, if that will be of assistance. As I indicated, Professor Sibusiso Vilenkomo from the University of Pretoria is the deputy chair of the board. Professor Michael Kahn, who's associated with the Department of Science and Technology, as well as the University of Stellenbosch, chairs our Research and Development Subcommittee. We also have from the University of Stellenbosch, Professor Mohamed Karan, who's a member of our council. We have Professor Frans Swanepoel from the University of the Free State. As a member, we have Dr. Chichwa from the University of KwaZulu-Natal, Peter Maritzburg Branch, Faculty of Agriculture, who is a member of council. We have Professor Maya Kiso from Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University, Deputy Vice Chancellor for Research and Development, who is a member of our council. We have Dudu Msomi, of course, and we have Hamish McBain here with us. We have Mr. Maxwell Sikhenya, who is a water sector specialist from the Eastern Cape, who is a member of council. We have Ms. Dudu Apani from just outside of Pretoria, who is from NAFU and a farmer and a very active member of council. We also have a Mr. Jassy from, again, the Eastern Cape, Port Elizabeth, small-scale producer moving into commercial farming, who's a member of council. So, we have Ms. Ina Wilken from the National Consumer Forum, who's a member of council, as well as Ms. Janse van Reysen, who's a toxicologist from Pretoria, and brings expertise in food safety, who's a member of our council, and Mr. Andre Young from the Mark is also a member of Council of the National Marketing Council, but he is with the Durban Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Market as an HR specialist who serves on council. So that's a very large council. And Professor Mkatshwa Mofokeng, who is a retired academic from the University of Northwest and UNISA, who still keeps an active hand academically, but is also a small-scale farmer. So that's our full council. Thank you.
We have just been informed that I'm not sure what is going on, but there is some added work on land bank, appointment of the board and so on. And of course also we did participate in the processes of OVP appointment. Now what is happening here is that some of these names, they go through this process here in Parliament. We never get to know what happened and what transpired at the tail end out there, because it is the minister's prerogative to appoint. So when we don't get to see the full complement, we will never get to know as to who finally got to be appointed. And also, apart from simply getting to see the people, whether they are beautiful or ugly, or they are fat or very lean, We should obviously have to make use of those people, as I said, in our own respective constituency areas. Okay, I tell you that I speak on behalf of all of us members. I'm sure we also were listening to some of the names and perhaps identify some of the names in our own respective areas, so that we in future make use of some of those. Dr. Mukule.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members, and also thanks to the board members who are present here and the support of the board that we as management have had since we've been busy with this kind of work. We really appreciate that. Chair and Honourable Members, I'll try and not be too long, and I'll try at least zoom in on the work for the new financial year. With the understanding that the few examples that in the business plan around the successes of the ARC that you can see on pages 6 and 7 of the business plan give you a picture of the kinds of successes that we achieved in the financial year 2009-2010. You will hear more when we present the annual report for financial year 2010-11. So that's still work in progress, and until it's been presented to the board, we will then only then present it here. But I just wanted to say something as I was listening to the discussion on OPT, to say, Jacobs, strategically you may need to save your money and not buy fridges. In that, very soon we will be once the department and other government departments have approved the results of this lumpy skin disease virus vaccine. For it to be released, we'll be handing it over to OBP for production. The importance about this particular one is that it doesn't need to be a fridge to go and transport it around the country, which will save you a lot of money. It will also save a lot of smallholder farmers a lot of money and make it productive. So the vaccine is there. We're busy now doing the clinical trials on it. It's almost ready. But, of course, trials can take 3 to 5 years, depending on the kind of data we get. I just wanted to say to the portfolio committee that we are in a very precarious situation, or funny situation. And sometimes the department is our partner, and then sometimes the department is our regulatory authority and policy authority. So we work with all of them, including OBP and a range of other partners that are not in the room. For purposes of being brief, I will not go into details about them. But before I proceed, Chair and Honourable Members, let me once again introduce the members of the management team that I have brought with me. We have Ms. Anati Kanga, who's raising her hand there. She's our Executive Director for Technology Transfer. And then we have Dr. Mohamed Jina, who's sitting here, who's our Executive Director for Research and Development. And on my right, I have Mr. Gabriel Maluleke, who's the Chief Financial Officer of the ARC, and Mr. Michael Netianda, who is the Executive Director for HR and Admin. They have been with us for at least the last 3 years in the ARC, and they have helped us in shaping the organization perform to the extent that it has done. But the last point I also wanted to say, Chair, is that I think it's important for the committee to be aware that in the new board of the ARC, there are four board members that are continuing from the previous board. So there is a sense of continuity, which is also helping the stabilize things in the organization from a governance point of view. And we appreciate their presence and their continuity in the organization. I won't go into the issues around the mandate of the organization. I think that's well clearly laid out. It's familiar to a lot of people. It's established in the legislation. But briefly to then say also our vision is really to focus around excellence in research and development. And we're talking about excellence in everything we do and trying to make sure that it actually delivers what is actually expected of us as the Agricultural Research Council. And hopefully we'll be achieving that through our mission. We happen to be, from the analysis and the information I've now been able to gather, on this continent we are now the largest single agricultural research institution, just purely dedicated to agricultural research. We're the largest one on this particular continent. Be that as it may, it also means that by implication we find ourselves in situations where we are called upon to interact with a range of partners, both domestically in the country, and on the continent, and therefore we're interacting with a whole range of partners on the continent and elsewhere to try and respond to certain key things. We do have values as an organization that are not too dissimilar from those that are in the public service around Batupili principles, around being innovative, and around also having people being accountable and so on. In the strategic plan that was approved by the board and that was also tabled here in the portfolio committee last year, we had five strategic objectives, which are to focus on technology transfer, food safety and security, managing and mitigating agricultural risks, sustainable use of natural resources, and generating new knowledge and applying that particular new knowledge. I have to point out that this one around generating new knowledge, from the work that we've been doing in the last 5 years, we've analyzed the outputs that have come out there, and it's become quite clear that a lot of what comes out of it is basic science that then feeds into the other strategic objectives. So although going forward we're no longer calling it a strategic objective, it is embedded in the other strategic objectives. It doesn't mean we've lost it. It's still a very, very important aspect of the nature of our work, because you cannot do applied science without understanding the fundamentals of science and information and generating that new knowledge. If we then go to the next slide, which just quickly is just a schematic that shows you the linkage between our mandate in terms of the act, our vision and our mission and our strategic objectives. I won't really go into them in terms of this discussion. We've just given you a picture of the organization, as a public entity. The board reports to the minister, and in turn, the board gives mandate to management through the president and chief executive officer. Our approach generally as an organization is to really try to find ways in which we respond and help the sector take advantage of competitiveness and comparative environment. That's within all the various sectors, the citrus industry, mango, bananas, ostrich, and so on. And I can give you an example about what I mean by that. If you take, for example, Zambia, which has an average annual rainfall of about 800 millimeters, what that means for them is that if they are to grow maize, they have a natural comparative advantage. So just by that you know, the state of the environment, they'd be able to grow maize much easier and much cheaper than us without having to engage in other things. However, through a range of work that has been done over many years here in the country, South Africa has a very large maize industry, has come up with unique cultivars that are highly productive and very high yielding, that can also be just as productive with very minimal rain and very poor soils. And therefore, we have a competitive advantage over Zambia in terms of producing maize. That's the difference between the two. And now, the importance for any country to get anywhere is for its ability to combine the two. Because if you can combine the two, you become the leader in the market. In this particular instance, we have the ostrich industry that has those two advantages, and that is why the ostrich industry of South Africa is the leading ostrich industry in the world. If we then move to what we are about, we're actually about trying to make sure that whatever research we do has specific outcomes that have an impact in the sector, and also trying to ensure provides a way in which that there is a particular critical mass in certain focus areas, and ensuring that the work that we do also is properly delivered to the communities and to the producers for economic goals and for competitiveness and so on. And part and parcel of us doing our work also involves trying to continuously identify new areas for future research and for future production and new economic areas. But we cannot do that as well without ensuring that we've got our resources properly mobilized, but also making sure that we're not dependent on a single source for our resources. We are a non-profit entity, which therefore means we heavily depend on grants. So we broadened the base upon which we obtain a lot of our grants. We obtain grants from the EU, charity organizations such as the Global Alliance for Livestock Veterinary Medicines, in short, GALVMED, from the CGIAR system under the CIMMYT, from the Gates Foundation, the National Research Foundation, the Medical Research Council, the International Atomic Energy Agency. That's just an example of some of the sources of funding that we generate for our research. And of course, as well, our biggest grant comes from the parliamentary grant that we get through yourselves as the Portfolio Committee in Parliament. And part and parcel also of our work is to try and diversify our capacity building initiatives and our partnerships in terms of collaboration to try and take advantage of reducing our costs, as well as trying to arrive at the new solutions for science and technology as fast as we possibly can, because you get to achieve more with a larger team and a diverse team from a range of other places. Of course, internally we have to also find ways of working in a smart way, trying to reduce duplication internally and improve efficiencies. So it therefore means we also work in a manner that looks at the multi-sectoral approach, where if, for example, people with expertise on food safety in some areas are not necessarily limited to working on a single crop, but may also work on projects that that are linked to cattle or other crops and so on. Thirdly, in terms of this particular business plan, Chair, if we are to look at the problem that the country has, we have a problem where the country has an import bill of about 4 billion rands per annum, resulting just simply from wheat importation. Now, everyone knows if we want a growing economy, we need to reduce that import bill. And that it also means by reducing that import bill, we'll be able to reduce the deficit that the country might have in its own current accounts, which then in turn means lower taxes for us, but also could mean that money can now be used much more effectively towards the growth and development of our own country rather than paying for imports of wheat. Then the question becomes, what contribution does the ARC have to try and deal with this particular matter? Our work then tries to focus on trying to come up with breeding programs where we come up with possibly new technologies or new solutions for producing wheat at a much more competitive level, having higher yields kind of wheat, and having cultivars of wheat that can be resistant to diseases, that are responsive and are adapted to changes in terms of that are arising in terms of climate change, but also having wheat cultivars that are helping people in terms of their own nutrition, meeting people's nutrition nutritional requirements, vitamin content of the food and stuff like that. But we cannot do that if we don't also have the right infrastructure, the labs that are required for us to be able to do that kind of research and the research farms. If we don't have the modern equipment, we need to invest in that, but also in investing in the development of science and maintenance of scientific databases and scientific information systems, and having the right information, the right human resources, the right expertise, and training our own people internally as an organization in order for them to be able to contribute much more profitably. But it also means that we also have to manage some of these databases, which then become national assets for us to be able to further come up with better and more and much more improved innovation. We do this as part and parcel of our response within the three strategic objectives of enhancing nutrition, food safety and security, managing and mitigating agricultural risks, sustainable use and management of natural resources. We hope that by doing so, we'd be able to help South Africa become a net exporter